this morning. This is our third week of Advent. The traditional theme that we celebrate during this week is joy. And so far during Advent, we've already reflected on themes of hope and themes of peace. One of the things I thought the puppet ministry did so well this morning, and thanks again for that, was talk about how during this season we're able to see ways that God's presence in life brings out a deeper meaning to these same themes than maybe we're used to on the surface in other parts of our life. So when we spoke about hope, we looked at passages that celebrate God coming in and making things right sort of in an ultimate way. But we talked about how we can be careful what we wish for when we hope for that, because God not only comes and empowers the things that we feel proudest of and most excited about, but God is also there to transform the things that maybe we're not always excited to show to people or that we would feel bad about. But that, in fact, our hope is that God does not ask us to leave those behind or hide them from God, but that we can offer them up and see them transformed and our lives renewed because of that. With peace, we know of some of the stereotypical synonyms of stillness, of quiet, of avoidance of conflict. And yet, as God comes into our lives, we see stories in the Bible of how peace becomes not the avoidance of conflict, but the willing engagement, maybe with some healthy discomfort we talked about, where we're safe but we're willing to stretch ourselves so that we can be reconciled with those around us, which is also different than a peace that Jesus went into in his social context, where there was a peace because the Romans had conquered the entire world, and so they didn't have to fight anyone anymore. But for those who were conquered by them, that's not peaceful the same way. So peace is not about winning, but about that reconciling that brings people together. And like the puppet ministry encouraged us, we can see deeper meaning for joy as well. I have to admit, I don't know what type of impression I've been making so far in this way as I've been settling in, but joy was a little bit harder for me to get into this week because I'm not a very emotive person when I process things. I'm a little bit more analytical. Hope and peace I could think of a little easier, more conceptually. But joy is still, I think, initially easier to process as an emotion, as an expression that way, and that's just not how I am. So I found myself having other kind of different angles to get to that sense of what's the deeper joy that God might be giving to us. Maybe oddly, the thing that came to my brain was the phrase, "I'll give you something to cry about." I don't know how many of you have heard that before or found yourself maybe not willingly use that yourself with other people. I know. That's one when I was a kid, I was like, that sounds so horrible. Why would you ever do that? And then as a parent, you're like, why are you throwing a tantrum at me about this? Do I have to give you a real consequence for your little brain to make more sense? So then is there an inverse of that is what came to me? Is a way of understanding the compounding of joy because of God's presence not something I'll give you something to cry about, but I'll give you something to joy about? Where we think that there's one type of happiness and then somehow it just gets compounded because of God's presence. I'll give you something to joy about. And an image for that that came to mind, which I don't think is really what's going on, but I think can be the temptation of how we think about the expansion of joy. I remember an old scene from The Simpsons where Marge had started like a cookie baking business, but it hadn't gone very well, so she had way too many cookies. And so she was telling Bart and Lisa, no ice cream until you finished all of your cookies. So they had to get rid of all of them. And so is that what it is? We just think of these sort of normal expressions of happiness, of plenty, of abundance, and then they just compound, and that's what God's joy is. Or that all bad things are turning to good, like we see in the verses this morning, where Mary and the psalmist are talking about people who are experiencing difficulty, and God showing up gives them a solution. Right? So many things to celebrate. The hungry are fed, it says in the Psalms. The blind see. The oppressed get justice. The plight of all types of immigrants is seen and they're walked with. The vulnerable, like widows and orphans, are protected. The low are lifted up, and wickedness, arrogance, exploitation are all thwarted because God shows up. And many of you may have other things that come to mind for you, where a difficulty you'd experienced, you felt God come into your life and alleviate it in some way, a sickness cured, pain soothed, conflict reconciled, like we've talked about. So amazing times of connection with God when we have those experiences. Since we're at Christmas time, sort of a classic story of this that's often lifted up at Christmas is about French and German soldiers in the trenches during World War I. Been fighting for months. World War I had some of the ugliest, most destructive ways of fighting, not only the broad use of the machine gun, but gas, so much suffering. And then on Christmas Eve, the French soldiers heard the Germans singing Silent Night as their way of celebrating in the midst of all of that pain. Joined in their own language, the carol sung a few times back and forth that way. And then a ceasefire even extended. And as the light came over the trenches and the barbed wire, each side got out of their trenches, risked walking towards each other, and they actually ended up greeting each other, exchanging gifts, playing soccer together over where they would be, had been, and unfortunately would be again, running back and forth, getting caught up, getting shot. Something breaking in to the midst of even the worst of humanity. And yet it is still more complicated than those stories of that initial breaking in. If we think about Mary's situation, this verse that Tack read for us is called Mary's Magnificat. It's what she sings in response to an angel announcing to her that she will bear the Son of God. And of course, we can think initially why she would be so excited about that. To be honored, to have a child, brings a lot of excitement. But if she could have looked ahead and seen all of the things that would happen with Jesus, would she have thought the same thing? She's going to have to tell other people, I'm pregnant, but I'm not married yet. Hopefully you believe that God got me pregnant. As Jesus began his ministry, people around them would similarly often think that he was crazy, presumptuous, a little over the top, maybe making enemies of the wrong types of people. Even Mary, we see in the Gospels later, would have times where she wasn't sure if she could trust the things that Jesus was saying about himself and about what God was promising. So they had conflict between each other. And then ultimately, of course, she'd have to see her son taken from her in the most brutal way. Those are not the things we'd expect a big joyful song to come in response to. That's obviously not the whole experience, but it's not a simple joy. And so we need to be convinced joy must be, as God offers it, more than just a feeling, more than happiness, more than excitement, like was lifted up by the puppets. Do we worry that Mary or the psalmist were lying? because we know also that there are people like those mentioned in our Bible verses today who do not get their solution right away, or maybe at all, as is described in the verses. The story, like I just told, and others like it, that we tell ourselves at this time of year with the World War I quick Christmas ceasefire, they tempt us to see only that initial feeling and then stay there to soothe ourselves and not wrestle with the potential deeper, more complex aspects of joy. Because they went back to war. Whatever joy that they felt there didn't stop them from going back to the fighting. We celebrate it because it's a relief, but it wasn't able to last. So how do we see those things that are deeper, that come from God for our experience of joy, that help us see and experience the world in a new way? One of the things that has helped me meditate and at least move towards an understanding of deeper experiences of joy, even in the midst of those purple times, even in the midst of knowing that not everything gets the bow on it as a solution, are the writings of Henry Nouwen. I don't know how many of you are familiar with him, have heard of him before. He's a priest. He taught at Notre Dame for a long time. Wrote a lot of books about connecting with God, about understanding concepts of faith. But then, at one point during his life and ministry, he felt called to leave Notre Dame and his professorship there and serve at a community for people with mental and physical disabilities called L'Arche in Canada. And he continued to write while he was there. And his writings became, in particular, reflections on those deeper things of life and our connection with God that take us below the surface, that help us to sit in the complexities. He'd write things about what it's like to submit yourself to what seems to be even mundane service. And in doing so, growing into new connection with God, new meaning of what life and relationship with other people is like, because you're doing those things that might be taken for granted, that might be overlooked, and yet you're inviting God to come into them and give them new richness and fullness. He'd write about the joy of shared experience with others, even and especially when that experience is not exciting, is difficult, is painful, is a struggle. One of my favorite things about him, I'd read maybe a couple books of his early in seminary, and then was in a class where I watched some recordings of him when he was on the conference circuit, right? When you're in church community, there's a lot of conferences if you write popular books that you can go and speak at. You can imagine that that's a way to feel some sense of accomplishment, to feel like you're able to connect to people all across the country or all across the world because they know your writings and your words and they appreciate them. He was distinctive because whenever he would go to a conference, he would bring one of his community members from L'Arche with him. And they would share the stage with him, and they would get to speak as much as he would. And you could see that there was this joy in his shared work with them to bring their reflections to people around them. That we might expect that setting aside some of your recognition would be very difficult, would be less joyous, and yet you could see that there was more joy because someone else was also being lifted up that might not ever otherwise be listened to by others. I think many of us probably can have come to mind relationships, seasons in our life that are like what Nouwen went into with the L'Arche community. Maybe it's children, parents, spouses, loved ones, ourselves, going through illness, seasons of struggle, those circumstances that are challenging and make us or them feel like we're on the outside looking in. When we tell people about those times and what we're walking through, we can sometimes get two reflections back. And from what I've heard talking to people, and I think is reflected a little bit in the writings of Nouwen, they can go in two directions, and if they go too far in either, it can be actually really dismissive and dehumanizing. Right? Either people see only the struggle and say, oh, that must be so hard and miserable for you. I can't believe that you're putting up with that. But we know those connections that we have with those people in our lives are still rich and full of meaning and connection and have their own joy. But on the other hand, we might have people say, you're so impressive. You always have a happy face on, even though this is difficult. Maybe they see more surface level things that's sweet or nice about the person who's going through something. And so, in fact, then the pain and the struggle that is also a real part of what's happening feel like you can't bring to anyone and have a burden shared. Process the things that you are trying to carry. But when we've had those encounters, those relationships, those experiences ourselves, I think that we know that there's a depth underneath and between those two poles where joy in those relationships is found. Because joy is knowing that there is more beyond yourself, more beyond your immediate experience, and that you have a place in it, even if you can't experience a positive side of it all the time. And it's joyful, if not traditionally happy, to be able to have our whole experience acknowledged, addressed, shared, carried together with others. Jesus brings these types of communities of joy together throughout his ministry. We see it even before he's born with his mother, able to be vulnerable as a poor young woman from nowhere, but also able to be lifted up as the person entrusted with the man who would transform the whole world. And then even beyond the resurrection, Jesus' followers get a thrill of victory over death and also the life that they are invited and sent out to will be one of difficulty, where they're giving something up to take something on, where the world around them does not understand the life that they are going to try to do together and will even resist it and persecute them for it. And in between, we can think of the stories of the Gospels where Jesus gathers exactly all the types of people that we hear about in the verses today. Many of whom do have their affliction solved, miraculously even by Jesus, but all of whom are invited into a life where their struggles are acknowledged and borne together between people who are both seemingly powerful and seemingly lowly. This life of the joy of Jesus is not simple, but it's very meaningful. And we can probably hear how it's distinctive from other problem solving we can see in society. I'd encourage us to reflect on during this time all the ways that we often hear the experiences of the very people mentioned in our passages today, and we can go back and look at all of those groups that are mentioned. And we know when we discuss as a society what it looks like to solve those problems, that certain types of loneliness are seen as reasons why people have to stay in their struggles and not have others share with them. How the interests of some of us are used to set up limits to the problem solving for other people. But the joy of Jesus and the communities that are gathered have something more to say and more to do about that. I think Jesus would invite us to not be like the people in the passages who are sent away empty because they are focused on their own immediate benefit, not the transcendent thing that God invites us to be a part of, even when some immediate sacrifice happens. In this way, both the forgotten and the despised, and the powerful and privileged, either have the opportunity to share in joy by going with the life offered by Jesus, or risk missing out on it because of what we focus on instead. And so together I invite all of us to share in this joy of Jesus. What vision can we offer to each other that's beyond us and can make us joyful even when things are tough? What joy can we experience by sharing our difficulties, but that we can also lift up has good things as part of it? And that when we model that, we can invite others to do the same with us, where they would hardly have any outlet for that otherwise. I think this type of joy is in fact powerful enough for even something as profound as the story from World War I, the tiny quick ceasefire, to not just be sentimental and then end up still with a horrific ending where they go back to killing each other, but to change the world where pain is addressed and not compounded through bitter conflict. As we talked about, I think it's the relationships that we're able to offer to each other, to share in what's uplifting, to make room for honesty about what's difficult, and in so doing, bearing that together and experiencing not just the surface sentimental joy, but the deep, meaningful, transforming joy. As we try to be that type of community together, I encourage more listening to each other, more listening to our community, like we're trying to do together right now. And we can move into one way of contributing and participating in this community through our tithes and offerings. Let's give ourselves to God at this time.